Srimad Bhagavatam translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 22. Twam Naha Sandarshitaha Dhatra Dustaram Nistitir Shatam Kalim Sattva Haram Pungsam Karna Dharaha Iva Arnavam. Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 22. Is it displayed? No. Tvam na sandarshito dhatra dustaram nistitir shatam kalim sattva haram pungsam karnadhara ivarnavam. Tvam na sandarshito dhatra dustaram nistitir shatam kalim sattva haram pungsam karnadhara ivarnavam. Can arrange one mic for others to chant? Vikalp mic. Tvam na sandarshito dhatra dustaram nistitir shatam kalim sattva haram pungsam karnadhara ivarnavam. Tvam na sandarshito dhatra dustaram nistitir shatam kalim sattva haram pungsam karnadhara ivarnavam. Translation. We think that we have met your goodness by the will of providence, just so that we may accept you as captain of the ship for those who desire to cross the difficult ocean of Kali, which deteriorates all the good qualities of a human being. Purport: the age of Kali is very dangerous for the human being. Human life is simply meant for self-realization, but due to this dangerous age, men have completely forgotten the aim of life. In this age, the lifespan will gradually decrease. People will gradually lose their memory, finer sentiments, strength, and better qualities. A list of the anomalies for this age is given in the 12th canto of this work. And so, this age is very difficult for those who want to utilize this life for self-realization. The people are so busy with sense gratification that they completely forget about self-realization. Out of madness, they frankly say that there is no need for self-realization because they do not realize that this brief life is but a moment on our great journey towards self-realization. The whole system of education is geared to sense gratification, and if a learned man thinks it over, he sees that the children of this age are being intentionally sent to the slaughterhouses of so-called education. Learned men, therefore, must be cautious of this age, and if at all they want to cross over the dangerous ocean of Kali, they must follow the footsteps of the sages of Naimisharanya and accept Sri Suta Goswami or his bona fide representative as the captain of the ship. The ship is the message of Lord Sri Krishna in the shape of Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam. Today we are observing the festival of the disappearance from our mortal vision of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We can understand that in a very real transcendental sense, Srila Prabhupada has not disappeared from seeing the devotees chanting and dancing enthusiastically in kirtan. We can understand that Srila Prabhupada is still here in the form of the gifts that he has given us. And of course, Srila Prabhupada went through so many trials and tribulations to give us those gifts. People didn't believe that he could do anything. In India before he left, he had to face disbelief. He was alone. No one else shared that vision of his, of the possibility of spreading Krishna consciousness outside of India. And even when he went to America and started to achieve something, still many didn't like to believe. He was, although throughout his life he had lived comfortably, in the sense economically comfortably. His father was a not very well-to-do, but moderately wealthy businessman. Not very wealthy, but just everything what they needed was there. Then when he came to, then he left home, and he was in poverty, alone, in America also. In the beginning, he had very little money. He suffered heart attacks, strokes, before he started this movement, and even when he started this movement, so many times he was sick. Hari Shori Prabhu mentioned once, I was speaking with him, that all the time that Hari Shori Prabhu was accompanying Prabhupada, which is about 2.5 years, Srila Prabhupada had serious health problems all the time. So we praise him for his fortitude. Especially on this day, we have to praise him. We should always praise him, but especially on this day, it's a day set aside especially for this. Just as we said that days are set aside for celebrating Govardhan Puja, Narasimha Chaturdashi, and so on. Today is special for remembering Srila Prabhupada. Now we know that Srila Prabhupada is so great. At the time, Srila Prabhupada didn't, he wasn't known for being so great. There's one aspect of his greatness which is not very well known. I believe it's not, well, I've read all the biographies and pretty much everything anyone ever said that's been recorded. Yeah, pretty much everything that anyone said, apart from that which hasn't yet been released. one of Srila Prabhupada's qualities is mentioning his fortitude, of which one aspect of fortitude is tolerance. And yeah, I've mentioned some things he had to tolerate: struggling alone, poverty, heart attacks, disbelief. But one thing is not very well known, that he had to suffer, yeah, it's an aspect of disbelief, but almost ridicule. People thought Srila Prabhupada was stupid, which sounds horrible. I'll discuss that. Now, how they wouldn't use the words I'm stupid, because they're more cultured and polite, but many people thought that Srila Prabhupada's plans for preaching in the West, big plans, they were pie in the sky, akasha pushpa, flowers. In English we have pies in the sky, and in Sanskrit we have flowers in the sky. In Bengali we have horses' eggs. Anyway, you can provide your own idiom. It's some nonsensical idea that he had. I'm going to quote from an essay written by an American scholar called Charles Brooks, who studied after Srila Prabhupada's departure, spent some time in Vrindavan and studied the effect of the influx of foreign devotees upon Vrindavan. So he wrote in this essay that Vrindavan residents remember Bhaktivedanta from this period. This is the period before he went to America. He was living in Vrindavan, he'd left home, and he was living in Vrindavan, translating his books, publishing Back to Godhead. So Vrindavan residents remember him from this period, but few suspected that he would be successful in implementing his dreams. I would say that's probably an overly generous statement. I would think that no one thought that he would be successful. The Mahant, the head priest at one temple, acknowledging that he had perhaps misjudged Bhaktivedanta's potential, nevertheless points out the calm determination that the Swami showed even in the late 1950s. So this is an unnamed, he's probably asked to be anonymous, an unnamed head of a temple in Vrindavan, speaking to an American scholar about his impressions of Srila Prabhupada living in Vrindavan in the late 1950s and early 1960s. So this Mahant states, I suspect it was, well, you know, no need to say. Prabhupada was always trying to set up speaking engagements whenever there was some special event here. He was very persistent, but we always found some way to politely refuse. I took him as a bother, really. He spoke some English and wanted to speak in that medium, but our devotees spoke Bengali or Hindi, so what was the use? Yes, he would go on and on about how this industrialist or that wealthy person would sponsor his mission to America, but to me it was a child's fantasy. Very innocent and improbable. He was not capable then of mounting such a movement. His intentions were there, but so naive, he thought. I thought, so naive, I thought. So this we can suspect as being the attitude of most people who knew Srila Prabhupada at that time. We don't find that Srila Prabhupada ever spoke of anyone who encouraged him before he went. Although I have met people in traveling in North India in the late 1970s. In Allahabad, I met two or three people. Srila Prabhupada used to live in Allahabad. I met two or three people who told me that, yes, it was me who told your guru to go to the West. After the event, they say, of course, it was his guru who told him, not some... So, yes, I knew him very well. There's so many people. Everyone I met seemed to have known him, which was possible, but not so very likely, as he was doing his business in Allahabad. So, Srila Prabhupada, he thought big. He always thought big, but mostly people ignored him and thought he was just ridiculous or ludicrous. That word ludicrous will come a little later in this discussion. He would write letters to Gandhi, to big people like Gandhi, and surprise, surprise, or no surprise, he got no reply. He tried to drag his godbrother, Srila Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj, to preach to Nehru, Pandit Nehru, the Prime Minister of India. So this was in his householder life, even before he was a vanaprastha or sannyasi. He was trying to get Sridhar Maharaj, come, let's go and meet Nehru and tell him what he should do. And Sridhar Maharaj, we can understand, also found a way to politely refuse him. In Srila Prabhupada's commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam, from which we have just read an excerpt, this was composed, the first canto translation and commentary, was composed by Srila Prabhupada while living in Vrindavan and Delhi before he went to the West. So we can understand from his purports that he was pitching his message at the world's leaders, the intellectuals, the businessmen, the politicians. He gives proposals in one of his purports in the first canto what the leaders should do to institute a Krishna conscious state. For instance, 2 compulsory fasting days in a week. Girls should be married by force by the age of 16 and boys by the age of 21. So he gives a list of things for the leaders to do. And in his purport to the Tadvag Visargo Janataga Viplavaha verse, that verse is almost like a manifesto for Srila Prabhupada's plans to make a revolution within the sinful populace, which also that verse indicates Srila Prabhupada. Vyasadeva, sitting in Samyaprash, in the Himalayas, was sees past, present and future, and seeing Srila Prabhupada coming, he said that this Srimad Bhagavatam would create a revolution in the sinful populace. So that definitely indicates Srila Prabhupada. It's just like the Krishna Varnam Twisha Krishnam Sangopangasta Parshadam Yagyair. What is it? I can't remember. Such a common verse. Anyway, you all know the verse, I hope. Yajanti hi sumeda saha. Which, it doesn't directly say Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yagyai sankirtana prayer yajanti hi sumeda saha. It doesn't directly indicate Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but if it's not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then who is it? It must be Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So similarly, this Tadbhag Visarga verse indicates Srila Prabhupada. If not him, then who else? It must be him. So Srila Prabhupada, in the purport to that verse, he states that if only the leading people of the world will contribute 50% of their income for spreading Krishna consciousness, then the whole face of the world will change. That's a favorite phrase of Srila Prabhupada. The face of the world will change. So he had big plans. And he did meet some big people. He had a photo taken with Lal Bahadur Shastri, who was the Prime Minister. And he knew Dr. Radha Krishnan from before the time when he became famous and became the President of India, because Dr. Radha Krishnan, he was a professor of philosophy in the University of Calcutta. Then later, and Srila Prabhupada knew him from Calcutta, because he'd go and meet, presumably he went to meet intellectual people. Then later Dr. Radha Krishnan went to teach in Oxford, and then later he was made the President of India. So he did meet some big people. He had, at a Janmashtami program, Srila Prabhupada organized a Janmashtami program at Radha Damodar Temple in Vrindavan. He had the governor of Uttar Pradesh, Vishwanath Das, I believe his name, he had him come and preside over it. And he knew also the Nehru family from Allahabad. The Nehru family were from Allahabad. And he knew Motilal Nehru and Jawaharlal Nehru and Indira Nehru. He knew them all personally, because he described that Pandit Nehru, he never liked to use Indian medicine. Srila Prabhupada was selling Western-style medicine, which wasn't very popular in India at the time. It was only for the modernized, westernized kind of people. So Pandit Nehru, he was that type, and he liked to use that. So he knew him personally as an acquaintance. He knew the Nehrus. So Srila Prabhupada, he knew many big people, many, some, and he was trying to communicate to them. But to his acquaintances, Srila Prabhupada's acquaintances in the Gaudiya Mart and elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada seemed to be just like an indigent dreamer. He had no money, he had no followers, and he was talking about, yes, I'm going to go to America and make a worldwide movement. And people, and he would try to, yes, let's organize a program and I'll speak in English, or you're organizing a program, let me speak in English there. And this unnamed head of a temple in Vrindavan said, I took him as a bother. That's a polite way of saying it, nuisance. Bit of a nuisance, he's always bugging us, and he's the kind of person you want to avoid, because he'd start talking about all the plans he has for preaching all over the world, and people, you just don't want to waste your time with that kind of person. They're just talking about big things they're going to do. Probably you've met devotees nowadays who talk big things but don't really do anything, and they're just laughable, or you don't take them seriously. I remember one godbrother from Bengal, hardly literate, who'd learned English by associating. He's passed away now. He's learned English by associating. He'd learned English by associating with his godbrothers and godsisters, who were in India at that time. The devotees were almost all Westerners, and this devotee had joined, and he was talking about he's going to take sannyas and preach all over Bengal, and It will make a revolution all over the world. And because whatever Bengal does, the rest of India follows, which was true years ago. By the time I knew him in the 1970s, it wasn't true in the early part of the 20th century. So he taught you all these things. And I have to do a lot of austerity, so he wouldn't sleep. He would just stay up all night reading the Bhagavatam, sleeping, but ostensibly reading the Bhagavatam. And we didn't take him seriously. And ultimately, he didn't do any of those things, except he did take sannyas. Bhavananda gave him sannyas. But even then, no one took him very seriously. I know some devotees who said fairly recently, who are saying that, no one knows how to preach here. We're gonna do some real preaching and take over Tamil Nadu, and we'll show you how to preach. All you're doing is... And so eventually they set up a little center in Kanchi, and after some time you had a few people joining. No one joined actually, but a few people coming for their program. It was just like anyone who went and preached, they get a few people to come, nothing special. And in the end, the great savior of Tamil Nadu, who was a brahmachari, decided to get married and fizzled away into insignificance, which he was anyway, but he had big, big plans. You don't know how to preach. You have no idea what it means to preach and struggle. Just they think that we'll go and talk, and my talking is so great that the whole of Tamil Nadu will surrender immediately. And there are so many. One devotee, I know, come and talk to you about it. We have to do this, and we have great plans. We're going to do so many things. And I speak to his town president, and who is this devotee? He has so many things to do. He says he's a completely useless person. He never gets up for the program, never does any service. We're just keeping him here in India because he's a Westerner, and it looks good if we can drag him in the temple sometime. But otherwise, talking so many things, and does nothing except talk. So maybe you've met such kinds of dreamers who are just talking big, big things, but basically they're a nuisance. Once you've met them and you've heard them, that's enough for the rest of your life. But they won't give up. If you're willing to listen, they're willing to talk. But it doesn't go beyond that. So I'm giving these examples because that was how Srila Prabhupada was perceived. As a big talker with big plans, but with no means to fulfill the plans, and just a dreamer. Nice dreams. He's not talking about let's become terrorists and blow up the Parliament House. He had good dreams, but just dreams nevertheless. Now I'm going to read from a letter from a devotee, a disciple of one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers. This devotee, his name was, what was his name? Mangal Nilay Brahmachari. In 1965 and 1966, he had some correspondence with Srila Prabhupada. Presumably Srila Prabhupada knew him from before Srila Prabhupada ventured to the West. And Srila Prabhupada wanted some help. He wasn't getting any Westerners to join. And even when Westerners first joined, they didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness. They had no idea whatsoever. We know from the first initiation ceremony, it's described that after the first initiation ceremony, Srila Prabhupada cooked a feast, and then everyone took prasad, which Srila Prabhupada had cooked, he served it, and then everyone just left. And Prabhupada had to clean up everything himself. They had no idea what it meant to be a disciple. So Srila Prabhupada was trying to get some devotees to come. Please don't take a photo. Put that camera down. This shining the light. We should have a policy for cameras. Or maybe it's a reflection, I don't know. Look. Anyway, so Srila Prabhupada was in correspondence that he wanted him to come and help. But of course, Mangal Nilay Brahmachari had to take permission from his guru, Madhav Maharaj. But in the correspondence, Prabhupada said, he more or less said, you don't have to take permission, we're all doing the same work. I'm doing the work of Srila Prabhupada, which in his language means Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. You can just come. You don't worry about your guru's permission. He wrote like that. So there was correspondence back and forth. And one letter I'm going to quote from, in which Mangal Nilay is addressing Srila Prabhupada. He refers to Srila Prabhupada's, your lofty ideas and ideals. In Bengali Vaishnava culture, there's an art which everyone knows of how to write in a very polite way and at the same time let it be known that you're insulting the person. Just, I'll give an example. Well, this letter is something. Well, not exactly insulting, but borderline. So, I heard one disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur refer to a disciple of one of his godbrothers who had become very prominent by preaching Krishna consciousness in the West, or some may say leeching followers. His preaching, a lot of it was, could be referred to as leeching or poaching, preaching, poaching, leeching. So he referred to him and said, yes, he's a very great scholar. He didn't say he's a great devotee. Yes, he's a very great scholar. He's been a servant of the mission for so many, but he neglected to say he's a great devotee. So, and then he pointed out some of the problems and said that, and without naming him, he said, this sahajiism which is spreading via this person, he didn't mention it via this person, but he said, it should be counteracted. So very politely, he said that he's not a great devotee, he's a good scholar, and he's spreading Sahajiyaism. So this letter is a bit like that. He refers, Mangal Nilay Brahmachari refers to your lofty ideas and ideals. Mangal Nilay continues, I prayed to my Guru Maharaj in my previous letters to give proper attention to your foreign preachings. Maharaji wrote to me in reply that you wanted to do something substantial at Jhansi some time before, and you wanted some brahmacharis in that connection from him, but he was disappointed afterwards seeing your silent attitude. So he is likely to take proper initiative if there is some bona fide records during your correspondence with Sri Padampad Singhania regarding Sri Radha Krishna Temple at America and the amount he proposes to spend thereof. He wanted me to write to you, to write to him clearly regarding your aims and objects. Even he wrote to me that if Padampadji wants, actually he is a big man to do anything easily and properly regarding foreign exchange, etc. If the program is not bona fide, the approach to a big personality will be ludicrous, no doubt. So that's the end of the quotation from the letter I'm reading. A little background here. Srila Prabhupada had formed the League of Devotees. It was a precursor to ISKCON in Jhansi, which is a town in North India. And he drew up a constitution or a statement of purposes for the League of Devotees. in which he wrote, he was alone, Srila Prabhupada, or in Jhansi, by his preaching, he'd got a few followers, but they weren't committed followers. They were part-time followers. They were mostly students who were attracted to him, but they weren't willing to fully follow him full-time. So they started the League of Devotees, and in the prospectus, he wrote that Brahmanas, we want people from any background to join to be trained as Brahmanas and sent to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. He's got no money, no followers. He's in a small town in North India, which most people even in India haven't heard of, just like most people in North India especially never heard of Salem in Tamil Nadu. And he's talking about a worldwide organization training people as Brahmanas to go and preach all over the world. And for his Back to Godhead, he drew up a prospectus for his Back to Godhead magazine that he wanted to get sponsors to send so many thousands of copies every month to different countries all over the world. The idea was to print Back to Godhead in huge quantities and then find out the names of prominent people in various countries all over the world and send that to them. And what happened to this scheme? Nothing. Srila Prabhupada went on preaching, printing and publishing his Back to Godhead, but the distribution, it wasn't by sponsorship. He would give, he would go in Delhi especially and sell copies hand to hand, like this. So nothing really happened. He had the League of Devotees. He got a prestigious property in Jhansi. It wasn't given to him per se, but it was given by word of mouth also, only. And then he was politicked out of that place. So it looked promising for some time. But in the end, it all came to nothing. And he was left with nothing but hot air, as people would see it. Hot air is an English idiom, which means that there's a lot of talk, but nothing substantial. So that's how people saw Srila Prabhupada. And you notice the word in the... there's one more thing I have to say first. But there was Jhansi. So, Mangal Nilay Brahmachari talking about Srila Prabhupada's endeavors in Jhansi. He's mentioning how he's bringing to Prabhupada's attention. You see, this is what my Guru Maharaj said. You want to do something in Jhansi? It came to nothing. Now you're talking about making a big temple in America, and you're talking about getting a donation for that from this very rich man, Padampat Singhania. So Madhav Maharaj is very realistically, you could say, saying that, well, if you send some actual record of that Padampat Singhania has confirmed he's going to send the money, and what do you plan to do, even if you get a temple in America? Just show us some actual evidence that you're going to build a temple, you're going to get the donation, and what are you going to do with that? And then we can consider. This was Madhav Maharaj's proposal or counter-proposal. Before sending anyone, let's see if there's something substantial. Otherwise, it's like chasing a pot of gold at the end of a rainbow, which is another English saying. Do you have that in Croatian? That if someone says, if you go to, you see the end of a rainbow where it reaches the ground, if you go there, you'll find a pot of gold. But of course, you could never find the end of a rainbow. It's ephemeral. Anyway, it's illusory in one sense. There's no such thing actually, there's nothing you can put your hands on as a rainbow. So Madhav Maharaj, you could say very reasonably, you could say that, said, okay, well, we can consider your program, as he did previously in Jhansi, thinking of sending people. Then we can consider, but just to send someone on some wild goose chase, I'm using a lot of idioms today, or some chasing after something, there's nothing there, chasing shadows, try to grab a shadow. You can't catch it. So this was what Madhav Maharaj said, and Mangal Nilay, in his letter, he used the word ludicrous. He said, if the program is not bona fide, and in bona fide, I understand here in this context, he means if it's not solid, if it's just a dream, the approach to a big personality will be ludicrous, no doubt. And those who are doing collection for temple projects and other things, they know how collection works, the science of collecting money from big donors. If you go to a big man, say someone from ISKCON goes to a big man and says, well, we have this program. He's not an authorized collector. We have this program. Can you donate for it? And the program is just some pie-in-the-sky idea. Then when someone, an authorized collector, goes and says, oh, your man already came, he thinks it's another person asking for something which he doesn't want to give to. He said, we're going to build the tallest temple in the world with an old age home on top. And they say, oh, really? And who are you? And what's your background? Well, I'm an independent member of ISKCON, and I just have a center with myself and myself and myself, and we're going to build a huge temple. Can you give a donation? And people think, yes, kindly just leave, take 100 rupees and go. So then when a bona fide ISKCON collector comes, then they'll think, the big man will think, oh no, another one of them, and just chase him out, or not even agree to see him. So possibly Madhav Maharaj was thinking like that also, because Madhav Maharaj was building temples. He made many centers, mostly in Assam, in Punjab, in Hyderabad. He was preaching and doing something. So he didn't want that dreamer, impractical dreamer, Bhaktivedanta Swami, would approach this big man and say, can you give a big donation for a temple? And it all comes to nothing. So the word, Mangal Nilay used this word ludicrous. It appears to be ludicrous. Madhav Maharaj was doing something substantial. He was preaching, making followers, devotees, building temples. And Mangal Nilay Brahmachari was one of the key men in Madhav Maharaj's institution. Mangal Nilay was collecting funds, meeting big people, collecting funds, overseeing construction. So Madhav Maharaj's outlook was that I have this man, he's a good man, he's doing substantial service, why should I send him to help this Bhaktivedanta Swami who's never done anything realistic, who has big plans, he's talking so many things, why should we take it seriously? This is Madhav Maharaj's outlook. So, it just seemed like a fanciful farce that we'll send men who are doing good service and they'll just be there and big talk and nothing there. Srila Prabhupada took umbrage, or he became upset with that word ludicrous to refer to Srila Prabhupada's activities. In reply, Srila Prabhupada wrote to Mangal Nilay Brahmachari. This is a letter sent from New York on the 16th of July, 1966, an extract. Srila Prabhupada wrote, "We are not always successful in our attempts in preaching work, but failures are certainly not ludicrous. In the absolute field, both success and failures are glorious. Even Lord Nityananda pretended to be a failure to convert Jagai and Madhai in the first attempt. Rather, he was personally injured in such an attempt, but that was certainly not ludicrous. The whole thing was transcendental, and it was glorious for all the parties concerned." So Srila Prabhupada is giving the example of Nityananda Prabhu, who wanted to preach to Jagai and Madhai. And Haridas Thakur tried to restrain Nityananda and said, no, don't go to them. They're the worst ruffians. Don't preach to them. They won't receive you properly. But Nityananda persisted. And he went and tried to preach to them, but the result was they didn't listen to him, and Nityananda was attacked by them and he got injured. So it might have seemed ludicrous. Yes, I'm going to go and preach to them. But the result was they didn't become Krishna conscious, and Nityananda himself was injured with blood coming from his head. You all know the story, how eventually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and at the request of Nityananda Prabhu delivered Jagai and Madhai to Krishna consciousness. So eventually it all worked out well, but immediately it looked like Nityananda's attempt it might have seemed to be ludicrous, but Srila Prabhupada said even at that stage it was transcendental and glorious for all the parties concerned. So Srila Prabhupada was seen as a dreamer, but he wasn't just a dreamer. I mentioned, without mentioning any names, some devotees who I know who speak in big, big things, but they achieve nothing. But Srila Prabhupada wasn't just a dreamer. He had a vision for preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world. He maybe didn't have a specific plan. That's another thing that the scholars, or Thomas Hopkins notes about that Srila Prabhupada didn't seem to have a specific plan in the West except to somehow or other get people to hear him and to chant Hare Krishna. But apart from that, Srila Prabhupada himself said, "I'm experimenting. I was experimenting." He referred to the first 5 years of his stay in the West as he was experimenting with giving people the chanting, the holy names. This is all coming in my Mood and Mission book. So Srila Prabhupada, he didn't have a specific plan, but he had a vision of how to preach Krishna consciousness, which the basis of that was the Srimad Bhagavatam. That Srila Prabhupada, he prepared the translations and commentary on the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and with the specific idea that when this is done, I'll be ready to go to the West, taking those books, and then the message will be there for everyone to read, and Srila Prabhupada will preach that. So actually Srila Prabhupada's plan, if you see, and you can study that prayer that Srila Prabhupada made also, Markirne Bhagavat Dharma. Srila Prabhupada doesn't speak so much about introducing chanting as introducing hearing the message of Bhagavatam from himself. So that was the vision that Srila Prabhupada had. He worked methodically to produce the books and then go to America, and then how to introduce it. His idea was that the intellectuals, they would take an interest. They didn't. It was the hippies, mostly hippies, who came to him. And Srila Prabhupada adjusted. He took it as Krishna's plan, and he worked with whoever Krishna sent, which he said was in the Indian caste system, as Srila Prabhupada often used the term, first class for Brahmins, second class for Kshatriyas, third class for Vaishyas, fourth class for Shudras, and for everyone else, fifth class. And Prabhupada said, I didn't even get fifth class men, I got tenth class men. So Srila Prabhupada worked with what he got, who Krishna sent, and Srila Prabhupada's activities flourished and were transcendental and glorious for all the parties connected. Srila Prabhupada said even at the time when Srila Prabhupada's plans, they showed no sign of fructification. Srila Prabhupada said the attempt is, citing the example of Nityananda Prabhu with Jagai and Madhai, he said the attempt is transcendental and glorious, but eventually Srila Prabhupada did fructify in a transcendental and glorious manner for all the parties concerned, which didn't include his godbrothers, although it could have if they had taken him seriously. Unfortunately, and we don't really like to say these things because time has passed and so many great personalities have passed away, gone to the lotus feet of Krishna. But it should be noted also that although our cousins and in the Gauriya Mat, we respect them all as great devotees or Jogata Bichari. What is that? Shakale Shaman Korite Shakati Dehonata Jata Jata. It may not be that they're all great devotees, but they're all elevated personalities. Some of them are certainly great devotees. But it is a fact which we don't want to discuss very much, but we shouldn't cloud over it either, that one of the problems that or obstacles that Srila Prabhupada had to face was the criticism of his own godbrothers. criticism, and in some cases, as Srila Prabhupada called it, politicking against him, especially in the matter of trying to get land in Mayapur and trying to always try, some of them, not all of them, trying to downplay Srila Prabhupada's achievements. Even now you can see at Sri Chaitanya Math in Mayapur, it says this is the, what do they say exactly? Akhor Raja Math. It's the source of the Krishna conscious movement all over the world. It's written in English, written in Bengali and English, which in one sense you can say it's true. But I'll tell you, I went to a program once in Mayapur where in one of the prominent Gauriya Mats, where the acharya was of the Gauriya Mat, he'd invited various sannyasis from different Gauriya Mats and some ISKCON devotees also, Jayapataka Maharaj. I just happened to be visiting Jayapataka Maharaj in his room, and he said, I'm going to a program at such and such a mat. Do you want to come? So I went. So this acharya was talking about how Krishna consciousness had spread all over the world. It's all by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, which in their language means Bhakti Stansasra Thakur. And afterwards, Jayapataka Maharaj said to me, he was disgusted. He said he never mentioned Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He never mentioned. He's saying it's all gone all over the world. So, but he didn't want to mention the servant of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who did that, who practically made him, made the world Krishna conscious. Srila Prabhupada often detected that others wanted to take the credit for what he himself had done. They always thought themselves senior to Srila Prabhupada, which they were before he did what he did. They were sannyasis. He was a householder. Later he took sannyas, but he was a junior sannyasi in relation to many of his godbrothers. He hadn't done anything substantial in their estimation. So they always thought themselves senior to them, and they could, they could never accept that he had surpassed them. Another scholar in Canada, actually, Joseph O'Connell, he was good friends with one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers who had gone to the West in the past, and this Joseph O'Connell said to this godbrother Srila Prabhupada, who was a very senior sannyasi of the Gauriya Math, he said that you could have done what Bhaktivedanta Swami did. It could have been you and not him. And as Professor O'Connell reported, the sannyasi replied, "I could have done it, but I didn't like to mix with low-class people." That was his response. Later on, some used to say that, well, Bhaktivedanta Swami was successful because he was a good businessman. He knew how to deal in the world and make money and this and that. At least they granted him some intelligence at some level. Later on, one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrother's disciples who became prominent, well-known in the ISKCON world for saving members of ISKCON from ISKCON, that they can only get pure devotion if they come to him, otherwise it's not possible. He said about book distribution, Srila Prabhupada's very dear program of distributing books, he said it's karma yoga and not bhakti. So you can see that all there's an undercurrent of disrespect for Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada, I'm just bringing it out now, I don't want to speak about it anymore, but it should be known that this is an aspect of Srila Prabhupada's pastimes that that also contribute. I'm not knowingly or unknowingly, I may be saying things which will not be very pleasing to certain persons, and I definitely don't want to make a vendetta against devotees, but I'm just pointing it out to say that this is another aspect of Srila Prabhupada's greatness, that he expected that he would get help from his godbrothers for preaching in the West. And when things started to flourish, he thought still he would get some help. But he didn't. Certain of them would criticize. And Srila Prabhupada once, speaking about, again, not all of his godbrothers, but certain of them, quoted in English a Bengali saying that, if by farting they could benefit you, then they would hold it in. You didn't get it. It's funny. Or maybe you're just shocked that Srila Prabhupada could say something about Vaishnavas. So I'm sitting up here, and on the program cover, there's Krishna with Lord Brahma, Srila Prabhupada with his disciples. And I'm in the picture also, and my name's there also. So we're here to glorify Srila Prabhupada. You've actually come to glorify me. So what is my claim to authenticity? To follow Srila Prabhupada. That's by following Srila Prabhupada I can take this glorification and hopefully digest it, spiritually digest it. If I take it for myself, then I'm finished. Jogata bichari kichu nahi pai tomara karuna sha. One point I want to make in this regard is that to understand a person, we shouldn't try to understand a person just from one anecdote or one thing that they say. There is a Bengali saying, which Srila Prabhupada would quote often, that you can understand if a pot of rice is cooked by taking one grain, and if you press it and it's soft, you can understand this one grain is cooked, the whole pot is cooked. But not every analogy is applicable in every instance. It's not wise to judge a person by one thing they say or one thing they do. Of course, if it's something really horrendous, then you know that, or you might think that they're a horrendous person. But even in such a case, there's a principle in Western law that even if someone does something really bad, they still have to have a trial, because there might be some reason for their apparent misbehavior, however bad it might be. So, just to give some examples, and in many ways, as I again point out in this Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada book, Srila Prabhupada was a paradoxical personality. He was the friend of everyone, as Krishna is, Suhridam Sarva Bhutanam. But he himself said that I am the enemy of everyone. Because in India they say I'm destroying the Hindu religion. Nowadays people don't say that much, but at that time that was a common claim. But by making these Westerners, Brahmanas, this Bhaktivedanta Swami is ruining the Hindu religion. And so I'm an enemy in India, and I'm an enemy in the West also, because they think I'm kidnapping their sons and daughters and taking them to a foreign religion. So Srila Prabhupada said, I'm an enemy of everyone. And he said about the whole, he said, I'm against this whole modern civilization. We see in this purport to the verse we read today, Srila Prabhupada refers to the educational institutions of modern society as slaughterhouses. That's an extremely strong statement. When the children are sent to school, they're not slaughtered physically, but they're slaughtered spiritually. So Srila Prabhupada said, I'm the enemy of the whole modern civilization. So he's the friend of everyone, actually, but he's perceived as an enemy of everyone also. Srila Prabhupada sometimes, or many times, criticized Gandhi. Just yesterday, Mahatma Gandhi, just yesterday I heard a conversation with Srila Prabhupada, said he's the worst misleader. But then sometimes he'd praise him also for some of the ideas that Gandhi had. He praised him, said he got strength from being a brahmachari. He praised his program of simple living and high thinking. Even once, although Srila Prabhupada, often said that Mahatma Gandhi was known as a great devotee of Bhagavad Gita, but he misinterpreted. One time he said that, well, it's good, at least he's showing some interest in the Bhagavad Gita. So sometimes praising, sometimes criticizing. Someone who Srila Prabhupada criticized in the strongest terms was a certain Swami from Bengal who didn't have very clear discriminatory power, although his name suggests that he might have had. So Srila Prabhupada said about him once that if I had been in power, I would have hanged him. That's how much he appreciated him. But he even once praised this Swami, who said something prior to Mahatma Gandhi when he went to the He was once asked in the Western countries, when he was there, what do you think of Western civilization? And Mahatma Gandhi said that, well, it would be a good idea. In other words, there is no civilization there. So once this something Ananda, he was asked something similar, and he said that, I can't remember exactly, he said that, you see, you're all descendants of monkeys. That's what you think. Your civilization is a civilization of monkeys, because according to Darwin, you all descended from monkeys. But my ancestors, they are descended from great rishis. So Prabhupada said, yeah, that's good. It's a good reply. So sometimes he even praised someone who, on another occasion, he said, I would have hanged him. Maybe he would have got a reprieve for saying that good thing. You never know. So I have taken upon myself the task of studying Srila Prabhupada, not like an entomologist studies insects or like a mundane scholar studies sadhus and religious movements, but I've studied him with the aim of trying to deeply understand what Srila Prabhupada came to give and what he wants to present to us, what he wants us to do. That, again, is the subject matter of the present book that I'm working on, called The Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada. I claim to present Srila Prabhupada as he is. I can't represent him fully because Srila Prabhupada is oceanic, but within our own limited capacity, I am trying to present Srila Prabhupada and his teachings as he is, without any speculation or adulteration. So I would request you also, don't judge me on just some statements I made or maybe the image I have in some people's minds. Recently I saw I was described as an ultra-conservative, said in a disparaging terms. So please don't do that. I guess you're not doing that. That's why you're here. Now I'm moving into not exactly speaking about Srila Prabhupada. I'm talking about myself as an attempted representative of Srila Prabhupada. I like that those who are representing me actually try to understand what I'm saying, listen to what I have to say. Again, don't judge on one statement or even on one whole lecture. I may give a lecture saying something, but you have to see it all in the context of the whole teachings. Yesterday I was reading from the Bhagavatam, first canto in Hindi, and it said, there was one sentence, what was that? I'll paraphrase it, that Bhautik Sangsar Mein Sukh To Hai. So I read that out. It's something that in this material existence there is happiness. And then I read the next word, Nahi. There is no happiness in material existence. So if you just take one part and don't take it all, then you may get a wrong experience. So please, if you want to represent me, try to represent me as I'm trying to represent Srila Prabhupada. And then the parampara from Srila Prabhupada will come down very nicely. When we insert our own ideas, our own speculations, then we get something else. One important point which I forgot to mention this morning in the class, so I'll just add this, is that some of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers were very disturbed that Srila Prabhupada had accepted the title Srila Prabhupada, and they strongly criticized him for that. I just just add that point. Mancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.